somewhere out there. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, of course, you know his name, Deepak Chopra. He will be our guest in just a second here on Coast to Coast AM. I want to give you a very quick update, by the way. Ann Strieber Whitley's wife still recuperating in hospital from the stroke, the brain aneurysm that she had that burst. She underwent an operation. She's continuing her recovery where she's been transferred to a special hospital for because of the specialized needs, and she's receiving expert care. So I'll give you periodic updates on Ann Strieber's condition. In a moment, Deepak Chopra, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, some friends of mine from St. Louis have just emailed me, by the way, an American Airlines Connection regional flight from St. Louis carrying 15 people to Kirksville, Missouri, has crashed in the woods in that town, Kirksville, Missouri. Early reports indicate 8 of the 15 people on board the plane died. There were 13 passengers and 2 crew people. 2 survivors are being treated right now at a local hospital. The flight left Lambert Field, where I fly out of all the time, at about 6:42 p.m. Central Time, and it was scheduled to land shortly after at 7:30 p.m. There was no reports of any problems with the Jetstream 32 twin-engine turboprop. It was American Connection Flight 5966. The airline is an affiliate, corporate airlines, an affiliate of American Airlines, headquartered in Tennessee. Deepak Chopra, MD, is known as one of the world's greatest leaders in the field of mind-body medicine, and he continues to transform our understanding of the meaning of health. Through this creation of the Chopra Center for Wellbeing in California, he is revolutionizing common wisdom about the crucial connection between body, mind, spirit, and healing. His mission of bridging the technological miracles of the West with the wisdom of the East remains his chief goal as he and his colleagues conduct public seminars and workshops, providing training for healthcare professionals around the world. Dr. Chopra is a fellow of the American College of Physicians and a member of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, and he is our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, doctor. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you. It's really good to be on your show again.
My pleasure. Still doing a lot of traveling?
Off and on, yes.
Well, that's good. Lots of things going on since we last talked, almost a year ago.
That's right. Well, I have a new book, as you know.
It's the Book of Secrets. What kind of secrets are we talking about?
Secrets that only our soul has access to.
Oh, really?
What the meaning of life is, what's our purpose here, where do we come from, what happens to us after we die, does God exist, do we indeed have a soul, if we do, where is it? What's the nature of evil? Why does it arise? Why is there suffering? These are the big questions, George.
And, you know, questions, I think, Deepak, that all of us continue to ask ourselves, many of us unable to really get those answers. And many of us, well, maybe all of us, would like the answers before we die.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you were and will be pretty instrumental in helping a lot of people with this.
Well, the Book of Secrets did come about as a result of my father's death, and I had a very intimate experience of his spirit when he died. I was cremating his body in India, and about 100 yards away, a few children were flying a kite using the draft of the cremation fire. Down the street, there was a wedding going on, and people were laughing and dancing. So all at once, I was intimate with joy, celebration, playfulness, death, grief, loss, all at once. And
yeah.
That's the play of life.
Well, it really is. And I think one of the secrets is how do you cope with all that, too? And how do you lift yourself up from the moments of all that? Because I think at any given time with people, you get the moments of joy, of fun, and also of sadness and depression, because, you know, we're human beings, aren't we?
Right, and all experiences by contrast. You know, if there was no darkness, you would not know the meaning of light. Up goes along with down. Hot goes with cold. Joy goes with sorrow. So, you know, the whole experience of life is because of meaningful opposites that give you an experience of contrast. Without contrast, there is no experience.
In this particular book, you have somewhat found or isolated a number of secrets that you believe drive our lives.
Right.
When you pick them up, when you jot them down, how do you find them? How do they come to you?
How do they come to me, Deepak Chopra?
Yeah.
25 years of serious reflective inquiry, meditation, contemplation, quietening the mind, getting in touch with my inner self, being part of a tradition where this has been done for thousands of years, correlating what I find out with what we know from modern science. So nothing that I write about is taken on faith or belief. It's something that is either experienceable by everyone, or there's a scientific explanation for what I say. You know, I do read extensively. I've read all the spiritual literature of the world, but I'm very selective about what I choose, and what I choose is something that is reproducible, that people can also experience, but must satisfy the intellect and also be scientifically reasonable, something that can be proven by science.
Did you ever get to a point, as you were beginning to investigate this, where you said, this cannot be, it's too strange, it can't happen
this
way? Yes,
of course, all the time, because, you know, a lot of the insights that we get about spirit, about God, about divinity, about intelligence in the universe, sometimes they're counterintuitive. They do not support, in the beginning, our rational worldview based on the old science, the old Newtonian paradigm of reality. But as we begin to understand these insights through modern science, which is post-Newtonian, or what we call quantum worldview, then they begin to make sense.
So many people quest for things like money and other really, I would say, egotistical things, that once they achieve it, they're not happy, are they?
No. In fact, there was a recent survey done of happiness across the world, and the U.S. ranked 16. Even countries like Colombia, where there's a lot of crime, Venezuela, which is a poor country, Nigeria came ahead of the United States. And, you know, it turns out that those societies where there's more emphasis on relationship and less on consumerism are happier. Even Cuba, which is a very poor country, the people are much happier because it's a relational society. And they don't have too much to buy, so they pay attention to their relationships and to love and to compassion and to understanding and taking care of each other.
I'd like to talk with you tonight about a number of things, Deepak, because there are questions, too, that I need answered for myself.
Sure.
And you might be able to help me and so many millions of other people listening
tonight. You know, when we do start, I'd like to start by talking about what is the hidden dimension, because the Book of Secrets is about unlocking the hidden dimension of our life, so maybe it would be nice to start right there.
And what do you mean by hidden dimension?
Right, obviously hidden, that was not obvious. So the hidden dimension of our existence is the realm of our personal soul, our collective soul, and the universal domain in which these reside. The hidden dimension today is referred to by science as the non-local domain. In the non-local domain, energy, information, space-time, and matter are all one field of pure potentiality. So the hidden dimension is the immeasurable domain of all that exists, all that will exist, and all that has ever existed. In this domain, there is no separation between objects in space, and there is no separation between events in time. When you tap into this intelligence, you find, first of all, that you experience great love because you are one with everything. Secondly, you feel intuitive and creative because it is in this hidden dimension called consciousness that the world is conceived, governed, constructed. And thirdly, you feel happy because it is the source of all fulfillment. So many spiritual traditions have said, you know, the most important thing for us is to be in touch with our soul. The soul is the window, the corridor, the transformational vortex through which we connect with the universal consciousness.
And you believe, of course, that the soul was created way before the physical world.
Well, in fact, the more we understand about the soul, we realize that it was not created, that it is something that has always existed as immeasurable potential. It evolves with time, but being outside of time at the same time, in spiritual traditions, immanent and transcendent simultaneously, it is without beginning and without end. And so, is, you know, that is also the nature of the universe. You know, when we say the Big Bang occurred 13.8 billion years ago, the obvious question immediately is what was there before it? If you say there's an ending, the immediate question is what is after the ending? If you say there are edges in space, then the immediate question is what's there after the outermost edge? So, you know, many of the tenets of quantum physics are, in a sense, stranger than we can think rationally, because the way we can think rationally is based on our sensory experience of the world, and it turns out that our sensory experience of the world is not the most reliable way of knowing the world. After all, my senses tell me the earth is flat or the ground that I stand on is stationary, and yet those two are not true statements. The ground I'm standing on is spinning at dizzying speeds and hurtling through space at thousands of miles an hour. And even though things appear to be solid, three-dimensional, today science tells me they're made up of atoms. The atoms are subatomic particles that are moving at lightning speeds around huge empty spaces. And those subatomic particles actually turn out to be fields of possibilities that can make choices depending upon the questions that we ask them. In other words, the universe is not built out of solid building blocks, but out of waves of possibilities. More like a mind than a physical entity.
Well, is the soul then, you know, conceivably part of or science, understandable by science, or is it more spiritual?
No, it's totally understandable science, and of course it's experienced spiritually as the things I said, love, knowingness, bliss, happiness. But what science tells us, that if you go beyond the world of molecules, you end up with atoms. You go beyond the world of atoms, you come to the fundamental levels of creation. At these levels, everything is instantly correlated with everything else. At these levels, there are no solid things. There are only possibilities. At these levels, there's something called observer effect, which means that the world remains unmanifested unless there's a conscious soul to actually transform that field of possibilities into what is called space-time events or material things. At these levels, there are quantum leaps of creativity. Subatomic particles move from one location to another location without going through the space in between. And at these levels, there's a proliferation of chaos, ambiguity, and uncertainty. But in that proliferation of chaos, uncertainty, and ambiguity, there's an emerging order, there's an emerging creativity. So science is definitely identifying intelligence as the heart of creation, that the heart of creation is not energy, not information, but an intelligence that orchestrates the movement of energy and information into space, time, and matter.
Interesting theory, indeed. So what determines the person? I mean, here I am, I'm looking at my engineer, running around doing what he does, getting things ready and on for this show. What determined who he is? I mean,
well,
did the soul determine who he is, or did he determine what the soul is?
No, the soul is his real identity, and the person is the mask for the time being, because the person was once a child, was once an infant, will once be a teenager, an adult, an old person, and then will die to reemerge as something which has evolved to a higher level of creativity. So at every moment, the person is actually dying and recreating himself or herself. You know, the two-year-old has to die so the three-year-old can emerge. The three-year-old has to die so that the teenager can emerge. The teenager has to die so the adult can emerge. And just like a caterpillar dies so a butterfly can emerge, so too consciousness keeps evolving to higher levels of creative expression. Consciousness is the soul that conceives, governs, constructs, and then becomes both the mind and the personality and the physical body, and through the physical body, the experience of the world. So, you know, the person is a mask. You know, the person is a role, just like a great Shakespearean actor knows how to play Mark Antony one day and Brutus the next day and Julius Caesar the third day and Macbeth.
And that's not easy.
The soul plays all these roles.
And it's not easy playing those parts.
It's not easy, but you play as a soul, as a human soul, you play an infinity of roles, and you might confuse yourself with the roles you play, but in fact you're the formless spirit that is manifesting at that particular role. Now, you know, the word personality comes from the word persona, which literally means a mask.
Well, how did the physical being, mesh with the soul? I mean, how did that come about?
The physical being is the expression, is the printout of the soul. You know, just like if I read Shakespeare in a book, I don't find Shakespeare inside the book. I only see ink inside the book, yet the ink symbolically represents what was going on in the consciousness of Shakespeare. So too, the physical body is a printout, it's a manifestation of the information contained in the soul, which of course manifests through your DNA as well, the genetic makeup. So, you know, you start out as a double-stranded DNA, which is just basically information. And that DNA, that double-stranded DNA multiplies about 50 times. So one cell becomes 2, 2 becomes 4, 4 becomes 16, 16 becomes 64. And within 50 replications, you have 100 trillion cells, which is more than all the stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and you have a human body. But the human body is really information to which food has been added. The information, in other words, is the physical structure, is the basis of the physical structure. The information, in turn, is contained in the soul.
Are all souls alike? In as much as, I mean, are there bad souls and good souls, evil and not?
Well, actually, within every soul are the seeds of good and evil. So within every soul are the seeds, on the one hand, of fear, of anger and delusion or separation. And on the other hand, there are seeds of goodness, harmony, love, compassion, and understanding. Again, remember, all creation is by contrast, so you can't have creation unless you have these opposing energies. Then, of course, the situations, the circumstances, the events, the conditions in which that soul arises influence the potential for good and evil. So, you know, evil manifests as a result of the sprouting of the seeds of fear, anger, and delusion when there are conditions, when there is a, for example, a condition where there's a perception of irreparable harm or injustice, or where there are conditions where there's removal of responsibility, where there is anonymity, where there is examples of poor behavior by peers, where there are passive bystanders, where there are inflexible, rigid leadership styles, where there's a sense of us versus them, when there is permission to do harm, when there is lack of accountability, when there is isolation, when there are degrading, dehumanizing conditions, then those seeds of anger, fear, and delusion will manifest as evil.
Stay with us, Deepak. Stay with us. Let's take this quick break. I'll be right back with you with our very special guest tonight, Deepak Chopra. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com.
Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Showers wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night.
Well, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Indeed, with our guest tonight, Deepak Chopra. And we'll be back with him in a moment. But first, let me tell you about the After Dark newsletter, the November issue. Evidence for a Hollow Earth Theory. You don't want to miss that. And also, you'll get Art Bell's CD, The Interview on Mel's Hole, when you subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Yes, you also get the CD when you renew. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Yes, all of you who are calling now, next hour we'll take phone calls with our guest, Deepak Chopra. I'll give you an opportunity to ask him a question or two for what we're talking about. I know your time's limited. You are all over the place. You know that? Deepak, you're on TV, you're on radio shows. You don't stop. Where do you get all your energy?
I'm probably a compulsive, obsessive neurotic. No, I'm kidding. I'm obsessed with what I do, in the sense that for all my life I've wanted to explain things that I've experienced. I'm a scientist by training. I'm a physician. I'm a doctor. I've seen people die. And I know there's a lot of fear that people have by not knowing the true nature of reality. And that once you give them insight into the true nature of reality, then they lose fear, and when they lose fear, then there's a chance for healing. Because what really interferes with the healing process is really the fear that we have about illness or about death. The fear creates adrenaline and cortisol in our system and wreaks havoc with our physiology. So the most important thing to cure, really in any illness, is the element of fear.
You know, when as a physician, of course, you're a mainstream doctor, scientist, I guess you could call, endocrinologist. What do other endocrinologists or physicians say about some of your theories now?
Well, right now, George, I'm really accepted. I wasn't in the beginning, but I now teach a mind-body course at a session at Harvard Medical School. I teach medical students. I give courses that are recognized by the American Medical Association for what they call the Physician's Recognition Award. I've been on the special panel for alternative medicine at the National Institutes of Health, in Washington.
Sure.
So really, it's taken a long time, but other endocrinologists and other physicians really and now recognize the role of not only the mind, but also the spirit in our well-being.
You have written a number of best-selling books.
I've written 40 books.
40.
The Book of Secret is the 40th book.
All of them informational and uplifting. Have you ever come across any case that even you, Deepak, would want to shy away from because it may be, and we're going to talk more about evil, it was just too hot to handle?
Well, of course. You know, there are situations where no matter what you do, the context does not allow you to move beyond a certain level. And, of course, the patient also has to be free of fear, has to go into that place of creativity. And there are many factors that influence the outcome of an illness, including genetic factors, including environment, including nutrition, including stress, including relationships, including emotions. So things are complex, and, you know, we're still learning a lot, but we have learned a lot in the last 30, 40 years. We know that wherever a thought goes, a molecule goes with it, that you cannot have a thought without a biological response, and that thoughts are actually more powerful than things. So that much we do know, and as we continue to know more, we'll be more effective as well. But there are limitations, yes.
You know, when you wrote this book, The Book of Secrets, and you started, you know, laying out what is there, what's in the universe, my big question is why? Why did all this come together? I mean, it's obviously a master design for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason?
Well, you know, where we are in our understanding, we can say how this came about. We can also say when this came about. But why? I think we all have to resort to must be God's will, the way, you know, the universal domain or the creator thought to create his or her or its creation. And there's no answer to why, other than consciousness creates because that's the only way we can experience anything. So we cannot answer that question. That is a very difficult question to answer.
I know, and I wish I could find an answer, but will we find it when we die, or do we have to go that far?
No, we don't find the why other than to say it's interesting, you know. I mean, why do you go to see a movie? Why do you sing in the bathroom? Why do you like to walk on the beach? Why are you moved by beautiful art? Why do you sing songs? What is the reason for poetry? These are difficult questions to answer other than they are opportunities for your consciousness, for your spirit to evolve into higher levels of expression. So by definition, the creator creates. And by definition, creation is a never-ending phenomenon. It's part of an evolutionary path. The more you create, the more interesting it gets. So that's the best answer to the why. Now, as when you come to how, that's a much simpler question.
Are there some people who are a little more sensitive than others in terms of being able to tap into this?
Yes, children are sensitive. Women are sensitive. Part of the reason women are sensitive is that they can tap into what's going on in their bodies. You know, biologically, they're endowed with a gift of being able to listen to their bodies more than men are because they have to nurture a human being inside their womb for 9 months. So they're more in touch with the body. The body is the place through which you really connect with the information and energies of the universe. So your body is like a computer that's connected to the cosmic computer. And the more you are in touch with the finest level of sensation in your body, the more you have access to what is called intuition. Intuition is a form of intelligence that is non-intellectual and yet very precise. It's contextual, it's relational, it's holistic, it's nurturing, it doesn't have a win-lose orientation, and through it you eavesdrop on the mind of the universe. So, you know, in order to tap into the deeper intelligence, you have to be A, not skeptical, B, not let your ego or your rational thought interfere too much, C, be open and accepting, and D, be in touch with the finest nuances of sensation in your body.
Is that a problem, the ego, with people?
Yes. Whenever you're in a place where you think you're superior or inferior to someone, whenever you're in the mood to control, convince, cajole, beg, insist, seduce, whenever you try to have power, whenever you try to manipulate a situation or convince somebody through coaxing or trickery, then you lose your connection because the ego is a controlling mechanism that overshadows the deeper intelligence that we have inside us, the inner intelligence, which is the ultimate and supreme genius and mirrors the wisdom of the universe.
Well, what's so wrong? Let's say great salespeople, for example, must have huge egos then, the way they position themselves for the sale.
Yeah, but as long as there's manipulation going on and trickery going on and coaxing going on, they might be successful in the short term, but in the long term, unless they're coming from a place of authenticity with the desire to help and fulfill your needs, and the long-term success will elude them.
Well, what if they're truthful, but they still have a little manipulation going on?
In the short term, it may work, George, but in the long term, any manipulation is destructive.
It does catch up with them.
Yes.
I've seen people do this in relationships.
Of course. It especially catches up in relationships.
Divorce city or whatever.
Right. Right. Well, right now the divorce, 50% of the couples in the United States are divorced.
What do you see as the most perplexing situation? I mean, if you could fix one thing on this planet, what would you do?
I would say that right now the wars and the terrorism and the conflicts in the world in the name of religious ideologies are really the number one problem in the world. And they impact everything. They impact the relationship between people of different countries. They impact our economies. They impact our sense of social justice. They impact the environment. They impact, how countries, some countries get poorer and some countries in the short term get richer. But we are not understanding the inseparability, the interdependence of everyone in our times today, because, you know, we live in a global culture where communication is so rapid that what's happening on the streets of Baghdad can immediately be known over here and have a psychological impact which can have a backlash somewhere else. So we live in a global culture where there is such interdependence and where the relationships are so important that these fractured relationships between people are creating havoc with civilization. And this is the number one pressing problem of our time. And this has a solution only based in consciousness, only based in spirituality.
If you were looking in the eyes of someone who was on their deathbed, and you could see the fear in their eyes, Deepak, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that the death is a transition and is an act of creativity of your soul to move to a higher level of its expression. I would, of course, would have wanted that particular person to have experienced the unknown much before they die, so when they actually die, they have no fear of death. You know, my father died in meditation and was fully aware that he was dying, and he died in total peace the way he had lived. And that's the way to really die. The quality of your life affects the quality of your death as well. And if you have experienced the unknown and made it known to you now, then you will never fear it when you actually die.
Well, is it difficult to convince people of that?
No, I think, you know, in my book, The Book of Secrets, I talk a lot about various exercises you can do to experience a part of yourself that does not know death, the part of yourself that doesn't die. Your body dies in the mind that you have at the moment, you know, the mind that is expressing itself at that moment through the body is also subject to death. But the essence that creates mind and body never dies. So, you know, it's very important for people to experience that while they're alive.
You know, what is there sometimes seems to be real, but it's not. It could be an illusion in the mind, right?
Well, so is everything else that you see as physical is impermanent. You know, everything that you experience physically has a beginning, is a middle, and an ending. And without the mind, it would not be even physical. Your mind is what creates it into the appearance of physical reality. Without your consciousness, scientists tell us the world is a radically ambiguous and ceaselessly flowing quantum soup. It's a soup of energy and information which in our mind and in our consciousness is converted into physical reality. So all physical reality is first experienced in the imagination, and then it becomes real. And so too, as the soul travels on its eternal journey through cosmic time, whatever it imagines, it creates.
Have you seen, and you drive cars, obviously, have you ever seen anybody road rage before?
Yes, I have seen people in road rage. In fact, I once had a person who got into road rage with me, and I stopped my car, got out of the car, and I went and talked to him and asked him if I could help him. And, you know, quietened him down and really helped him alleviate his stress.
Did it work? You're lucky he didn't try to shoot you.
Yeah, no, it worked. In fact, you know, once I was held up in a little town in the United States in the South in the middle of the night by three young kids, and I talked them out of it.
They pulled a gun on you?
They pulled a gun on me, and I said, you know, you're going to get into trouble. What you want is money, and here's the money. And drop the gun, because, you know, if you do that, I promise you I won't tell anyone. I won't call the police. I won't even tell my wife. For a whole month, I won't tell anyone. But I don't want you kids to get into trouble. And so they were, you know, the gun was shaking in the hands of one of the kids. And then finally I said, drop it. Here's the money. Just leave me my credit cards. And he dropped the gun and he ran.
And then you picked up the gun and shot them, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I just walked away and I've kept my promise. I didn't tell anyone.
Did you pick up the gun and turn it in, or what'd you do?
I picked up the gun and I turned it in a few days later.
See,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people email me about forgiveness, and you seem to be the kind of person who could do that. I'm not sure I can, and I don't know why.
You know, the forgiveness starts with forgiving yourself. You know, you should ask yourself, am I perfect? And the answer is no.
Of course not.
Okay, so am I capable of some of the things that I most dislike in other people if the circumstances were there? And the answer is yes. You know, if you were in a position where you were surrounded by dehumanizing conditions, there was abject poverty, that you felt that you had been harmed, you felt a sense of injustice, then those same tendencies could come out in you. So the best way to start is say, you know, I'm not perfect, and that's okay. I love myself as I am, and I'm grateful to God for making me just as I am. And I say, thank you, God, for making me just as I am. I love myself as I am. And then having done that, you say to yourself, every decision I make is a choice between a grievance and a miracle. And when I let go of my grievances against other people, I will choose miracles. And in that moment, you bring to your awareness all the people that you're holding grievances against, and one by one, you let go of them. That is the true act of forgiveness. And when you do, you feel that you have shed a huge burden, because the burden of judgment, the burden of holding grievances and resentments, is a huge psychological burden. And when you shed that burden, you have access to a creativity that allows you to receive miracles in your life. So it's not a question of, you know, can I do that or can I not do that? Everyone can do that, and when they do that, they feel that they have access to a creative intelligence that was there all the time, but it was overshadowed by their resentments and grievances.
Could you forgive someone who, let's say, murdered a member of your family?
Yes, I could, because what would I get by having them killed in turn? How would it help me or my family? I would try my best to understand the situations and circumstances that created that, and then would do everything to alleviate such conditions in which these horrible things arise.
Deepak, the book, I'm going to keep you for one more hour for phone calls.
Okay,
is that okay?
Sir.
The book, the Book of Secrets, where do you get that? And when
is
it out?
There are 15 secrets, and they're secrets of the soul. If you want, I can go over them really quickly. The first is the hidden dimension.
No, I mean as far as the book itself, how do you get that?
Oh, you can get it in any bookstore. You can order it over Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Noble or, you know, Borders or any bookstore. It's all over the place.
So it's out, ready to roll, huh?
Right. I actually just entered the New York Times extended bestseller list.
You always do.
Yes.
You always do. I tell you what, we're approaching the top of the hour.
Okay.
So when we come back, we'll take phone calls. We'll run through these 15 secrets.
That'll be great.
When we come back as well. Your website, of course, is Chopra.com, right?
Yes. And there's another website that I would like to mention that people might enjoy going to. It's called Wild Divine, wilddivine.com.
Wilddivine.com.
And it's a place where you have access to video games that allow you to strengthen your mind-body connection.
That's interesting. Can we link that up with your name on the coasttocoastam.com
website? Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Lex, take it away, and we'll be back at the top of the hour because of the shortened night with Dr. Chopra. We'll take another hour of your phone calls now, so let's get ready for that. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
I've had a lot of